Hello and welcome to The Dive Season 4, Episode 19. I am Kobe, joined by Azale and Mark Z.
Yo, what up? No, I don't know what I'm doing. Get me out.
Oh, no. Mark about to drop a diss track.
Mark's about to leave and not come back. That's what he's about to do.
No idea what that was. But welcome to the show. Another new week of The Dive. We had a pretty exciting start of LCS. And we got a lot of questions about our previous Dive episode because we had a super good conversation, both about, you know, the path to pro as well as aging players. So kind of wanted to start again, picking up on some of the questions that people had last time around and discussing one of these topics from a different angle, not revisiting stuff that we already said, but we did get some about if you were a player right now in North America and you're trying to be one of the new talents, what steps can you actually take? Because we can sit here and people complain all the time, but what actions can you actually take to start improving and earning that spot?
I mean, I think the obvious way to actually get attention and to try to get a spot is through scouting grounds, right? You know, very clearly, if you actually qualify, I believe it's like top four of every position on scouting grounds, or at least I think that's what it was last year. You know, I attended pretty much all of scouting grounds last year, and there are lots of pro players there watching you. There are lots of pro coaches. People who qualify for scouting grounds, do well at scouting grounds, get signed. As simple as that. Right. And I think that, you know, that is why the solo queue experience does matter. I would also say that sometimes people, you know, I think lose track of how important, you know, the impressions that they are giving other pro players are.
Yeah.
You know, you need to really like be on your A game all the time. You know, people who are just like, you know, inting away games when they get frustrated or really toxic or passive aggressive and stuff. Guess what? If you're in Challenger, there's a very high chance that there's a pro in your game, either on their main account or a Smurf or something, or their friend is in the game and telling them how you're annoying. And you know, when you get that kind of reputation, and we all know that there are players out there that get those reputations, no one wants to play with you. And you know, that is something that people really have to be cognizant of as well. You have to be consistently having, you know, a good attitude, and you know, or at least not a negative attitude, right? Like, you know, the bare minimum is enter the game, slash mute all, don't say a word, and try your best.
Yeah. When I was on Team Liquid, multiple times our players were the ones to be like, hey, this guy was really good, keep an eye out for him. Like, we got Bunny Fufu from basically solo queue. Phoenix as well was someone who was on like a Challenger level team, but we didn't really know that, and we just recognized him from solo queue and stuff. To your point about toxicity, solo, someone who's in the LCS right now, we had players back then who were like, I don't want him on our sister team, because we had a bunch of sister teams, and like, I don't want to play with that guy.
Yeah.
And like, he lost out on at least some opportunities with us because of that reason, that in solo queue people did not like him. And so to your point, you know, like, if you're playing well in solo queue, and you don't even need to be, like you said, a super nice person, but just playing well, people will notice. There was a clip of Double Lift on Reddit hyping up a support that he was playing with on stream. And then if you want to like take that next step to do a little bit more than just being a grind lord who's good at solo queue, like, start reaching out to the pros, try and add them to your friends list, talk to them a little bit. Don't be annoying, like plug your Twitch. That's annoying. But if you just want to be like, hey, I'm trying to get into the LCS, or I'm trying to go pro, like, do you have a tip or anything, or, you know, yada, yada, yada. Make a social media account, interact with people, you know, like Five Fire, I know, does that. And that's when I found out about him, was I saw like his Twitter and stuff like that, as well as being really high rated in solo queue. So like, you can do stuff like this.
Yeah. I had several points, and one of the main ones that you touched on is if you want to be part of one of these organizations, people have to want to work with you. So the social aspect, and this is true in any job, by the way, this is not just true in team games, but it is really emphasized in team games, and especially team games like this, where in some of the situations, they still have gaming houses, people live with each other. You work so closely in this situation that it's, you know, tenfold of what you would think that you have to present yourself for a normal job, because of the amount of interaction that you have with the other players. So that to me is paramount. Like, you have to be a nice person. People have to want to work with you. That's baseline. The other thing is, like you're talking about for solo queue, I think it actually, this should be one of the driving factors to make solo queue better is, you know, people that are trying to claw their way to the top. You don't have to hire an editor or anything, but even if you have a good clip, like just have your games being recorded when you're in high elo solo queue. When you get your game with double lift with Bjergsen or something like that, and you have some pop off play, if you even just have your little Twitch clip or something, and try and post that, that can gain traction. It's some of these small things where you just keep throwing them out, keep throwing out clips and stuff like that. Maybe one of them blows up. The other thing is the rules with scouting round are you have to pay attention to, because they have stuff like you can't be a one trick. There's a certain ratio that you have that you're allowed to play of like different champions.
Yeah.
So while you're climbing, pay attention to those, because your point about scouting grounds is super big. That's the system that we built up to try and help people get there. So apply through that and go through the proper channels.
Yeah. I mean, like from, it always sounds so cheesy talking about like just like be nice, you know what I mean, but in WoW and stuff, like, because that's where there's so much of my experiences from, it was always so true. It was just like if someone was high rated and people liked them, even if they didn't think they were as good as like their teammates or their pros or whatever, they would be willing to play with them. And sometimes you can learn so much from playing with a current pro who can kind of impart some knowledge onto you. And it's like, if you get along with this person, people are more likely to recommend you, more likely to want to play with you and do it with you and promote you, you know, when these opportunities come up. So, I mean, that I think should be a bit of a driving force, but at the end of the day, it's like, you know, you have to be good, right? You know, that is the biggest factor is your skill. And I mean, that is why, you know, there are players who, you know, sometimes like have attitude issues, but are still around in the LCS, because at the end of the day, everyone wants to win, right? And that's what it's always going to kind of come down to.
All right, next up, we've got your boy Aphelios.
Whose boy?
My boy, your boy. It's really all of our boys, right?
Moon's boy.
Probably the second most infamous champion right now. I would say I would still put Yumi as the most infamous.
Zoe hero. Is Zoe, so happy yeah. These two showed up. Zoe's, yeah. Zoe's out.
She's like, good. Everybody look
yeah,
at
I'm
those
not with
two.
Those guys. I'm not.
Yeah, they suck. Who
look at those stupid champions. Who designed them?
It was pretty cool, though. The last weekend, LS had a tweet about people playing against Aphelios. And there's always these big kind of groupings where social media will just glom on to an idea and everybody kind of pile on one way. And then someone points out, hey, look the other way. And then everybody kind of piles on looking the other way. And it is important to always have multiple, you know, perspectives and look at it from the other side. For me, when I see Aphelios, I've always bring up, okay, play Syndra bottom into it, because you can also throw Aphelios's turrets just like you can throw Heimer's turrets. And the weakness of Aphelios, and to me, it's always kind of funny when people point out this specific weakness of like, oh yeah, that champion's not OP. Just hit him with crowd control, 100% to zero him. That's the counter to this champion.
That's counter to every champion. Yeah,
exactly. You're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I hit this 100% to zero in CC, but it actually is like more true for Aphelios because he doesn't have dashes, and it's easier to land those forms of crowd control. So it is still worth bringing up the point of, hey, use Syndras, use Blitzcranks, use those types of things to try and attack him. Use champions that will dive. Because that is a weakness, but
you also can't lose sight of your overall team composition and how it interacts, you know, with other things, because that's exactly what happened at TSM, right? They do this bot flex for Syndra into Aphelios, sick, you have your super good matchup, let's go, and then they just like completely forgot about the rest of the game.
Fiddle mid,
tank fiddle mid into tanks, like all of a sudden, who's gonna kill the front line? Nobody. Okay,
we'll
on
lose
to
the
next game. Yeah, I mean.
Sorry, go ahead.
All you.
All right. I was going to say the other thing too is like the guns that he has out can really change like how you interact with them, because like a lot of immobile champions, you would take like assassins or melee things and like kind of dive into them. But if he has like red gun turret, you know, like that's a pretty gnarly combo to try and jump onto. Yeah. And like there was a play, I forget which game it was, where like people tried to dive in Aphelios and he had red gun out and he ulted. And they like had two people go. It wasn't a clean dive, you know, but like they misplayed. And I guess this is maybe a little bit to LS's point about people not playing around him correctly. But it is difficult to play around him compared to other champions because of things like this, where his situations are so wide and varied, where you're like, oh, it's a 200 health Aphelios. Every other 200 health immobile marksman, I just go in and kill him real quick. Boom, 700 health back. And you're like, okay, that's, I mean, I could have seen the red gun, and like, you know, but in the moment when there's so much else going on, it can be difficult.
Yeah. I think that's the main complaint that I still see around this champion, is that it requires so much of a different, you know, thought process to play around than most other marksmen. Mm-hmm. And when you look at it, and we've even seen in our pro games, Mordekaiser goes up, I believe it was Doublelift was the Aphelios. It was Viper, goes up, yeah, and ults him, walks up, and normally you're like, all right, you take the champions away, you just put the rolls there. You're like, yeah, that's how you kill them. You go 1v1 melee range with this Aphelios. And you're like, well, okay, wait a second. He's got Crescendum and he has Severum, the healing and the Crescendum, the highest close range damage guns plus the healing. And he just annihilates the Mordekaiser. Oh, yeah, duh. Like, you should not, you have to change and adjust for so many of these.
And then Viper did it like two or three more times in the same game.
But like at the same time, like, what do you, like, you know, if he has those guns out, would you just go, okay, I'll go AFK until you swap to guns that let me play the game? It's, I think that's where I land on it, is like, yes, he's a little OP right now. Some nerfs can adjust that. No, people don't play around him correctly. It's a little column A. And then the part of column B that I still definitely, you know, sympathize with is like, he's still also just a little annoying. He's just, like, it's just obnoxious to have to play around some of these components.
I mean, and his peaks are insane, right? Like,
yeah. And then, and you can't really control them as the opponent team. So like, in terms of like what the counterplay is like weight, which is like, not always a fun option.
Well, and sometimes you're doing something and you don't even know what he has, and then he comes out of Fog of War and it's like, okay, we already doing this, right? You know, like I recently had a game where we were enormously ahead. The Aphelios was like 0-5, 0-6 or something. And we started Baron, and he just like, you know, their team that like we almost have the Baron down, and he just like over the wall, like he had one of his teammates forwards, and then he just ults us, and he almost 100-0'd our whole team because we're all stacked with the Infernum ultimate, right? And it's like things like that. You know, maybe we could have anticipated that he could have it or whatever. But like the peak potential of his damage is so crazy with some of these AoE guns, especially, you know, Infernum and some of the different combos that he can have, like splashing off of minions to other minions and then to you and things like that. Like it is pretty shocking. But I would say, like, generally speaking, at least in solo queue, this champion doesn't even have a very good win rate. And that's like, something that I think makes it more complicated to balance, right? And then the designers basically have to decide, like, okay, do we just like not like what this champion is doing for the game? And if you don't like what the champion is doing for the game and you think that it's unhealthy or unfun or whatever, you can pretty much just kneecap it, and then it's like, okay, well, now no one's gonna play Aphelios, right? But you know, looking at it right now, like plat plus 47.75, even in diamond it goes up a little bit, but 49,
which is not surprising due to the design of his kit, right?
Yeah,
he's built for these big moments,
and it's like challenger is always so hard to look at win rate wise because there's just not enough pick rate, but it has a 45% win rate in challenger according to this website that I'm looking at. So it's like his win rates aren't astounding. Sample size matters a lot, and pro play is very different because it's more passive, and people generally, you know, are able to farm more freely and get to a point where, you know, they can kind of take over. And I think to me, like I don't know exactly what LS is talking about, if he's talking about it specifically, but that's sometimes how I see things when I hear about, you know, players talking about like, oh, this is punishable. People just aren't trying to punish it. Like if you watch 2v2 in pro, and this goes for any region, like there are sometimes games where people like will pick like Thresh or whatever, and they don't even hook once in the entire laning phase. They don't even try, right? It just becomes this like very passive farm it out style, where they're kind of waiting for later. And Aphelios benefits a lot from that. I also think that champions like Caitlyn can be pretty problematic for Aphelios. You know, like there are some strong laners that I think we're not really seeing like back in LCS these days that are doing well in solo queue. Like Caitlyn's win rate has been pretty high for a while. It had kind of fallen off, but I think Caitlyn is back pretty heavily. I do think, you know, even things like Ashe can do well. If people are going to AFK farm, you can try to take scaling options into it and play like things like Jinx or whatever. But you know, we're mostly just seeing people kind of be willing to take the trade of like Ezreal versus Aphelios. And then if you play it passively, well, Aphelios is probably going to be worth a lot more later.
Yeah. I mean, Ezreal can be good in lane because Q's in super long range, but the pros are able to use his team fighting so well. And that's one of the things I want to get right into the patch notes, because Felios is getting nerfs on live on 10.13 that is coming out, and they're attacking some of these key areas. For me, one of the big ones was that he can annihilate Baron actually like no other marksman when you have Crescendum. They are nerfing the Q sacking to epic monsters. He can still do it pretty well because of the way it works with the other guns proccing and refreshing them. Like if you have sniper rifle and you start like poking enemy champions, so there's still some options for him, but I really like taking away some of this, oh my God, we left Aphelios and like one or two other champions alone with the Baron for 10 seconds. And the other team was able to get this big objective that's supposed to, you know, require a lot of investment. And then they also hit the ultimate a little bit for the, you know, the follow-up bonus damage for the crit. So I think those are both good. Some that are not directly targeted at Aphelios but will touch him are also the Conqueror stacking Runon's thing that they fixed.
Death Dance also got hit a little bit for ranged burst reduction, I think it was.
Take 10% less damage instead of 20% if you're ranged.
That's all marksman.
Yep.
But that is a big Aphelios thing, I think, right? Yeah. You know, because it's like he has a lot of self-healing anytime he has his red gun out. And it's like it hits a certain point, right? Where it hits this threshold where you actually just like can't out-damage his healing.
In Axe 1v4, that was like insanity. He didn't even have red gun. He just had a ton of chakrams because he used his blue gun well on the wave.
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking. I've looked at clips before that I was like convinced were bugged and sent them to the designers and stuff. I'm like, this makes no sense. And they're like, I think that's how it's supposed to be. And I'm like, what the heck? There was one, I remember it was like FBI last year, and he didn't even have a red gun out, and he healed for something like 1100 in one auto. And I'm just like, what the hell? Just because it's like all the splash and you're healing off the healing off the healing, you know, it's just nutty.
That's why I like the Conqueror change also, because Aphelios built Ruinon's Hurricane, and you could have the multiple prongs getting the different stacks. So a lot of little kind of fringe things that are going to affect him. Definitely like it. Are there any specifics in this patch you want to call out? Because I had a couple. I have one of my jungle technology use a different sneaky champion.
You're not going to do the Nocturne one. This sounds like you have something else.
No. That's too mainstream. Nocturne's already.
I'm mainstream. Pro. We saw it this weekend, and it's getting a buff. One is a bug fix. One's also a buff. The basic attacks reducing Umbral Blade's cooldown by 2 seconds instead of 1 second on monsters will help his clear speed and heal, technically, but the clear speed is the most important part of it. Just getting the AoE proc more often and the bonus damage from it.
Yeah, the two things that really kind of popped out to me were the Ornn change, because, I mean, Ornn is still such a mainstay in competitive. You know, now essentially what it is like, you know, previously if you built HP or mana in lane, you just had that amount of HP or mana added to your current bar, right? So if you built a Ruby Crystal, you gained 150 health. Now it's going to be based on your percentage health, and your percentage health will stay the same. So you're not getting that full amount from items, which makes like the standard kind of like catalyst rush that like a lot of people do in a lot of cases, you know, a lot weaker for lane. So there's more of an opportunity to actually bully out the Ornn. You know, and if you're able to actually like make him run out of mana and force him back, and he can't just buy a mana crystal and things like that, then that can really change his strength. And I do think, especially for tanks, like if you're able to force a TP before they have a good buy in situations like that now, that can completely, you know, reduce the priority on a champion in competitive play. And then the other one was the Zumi's nerf. For Yumi.
Ooh, the big one.
For Yumi's.
Yeah, so this one, like, I'm going to be honest, I haven't, like, I was looking at some of the math, but, like, it is a little bit complicated in how much it's actually going to do. I was listening to Freak talk about it on his patch rundown. So, essentially, you know, the base cost was much higher previously. It went from 100, now it is 40, but it is plus 15% max mana. So, any situation in which you are building, you know, getting additional max mana, like if you have Mana Flow Ban and Presence of Mind, which every Yumi ever took, then it becomes monstrously more expensive, right? You know, Mana Flow Ban and Presence of Mind, it gave you at full stacks 750 more mana, right? And then if you have that, basically at all stages of the game, the heal cost more than double, essentially. You know, this is kind of like a generalization. There is some differences based on your level. If you are building no flat mana whatsoever and not taking that from your runes, then the mana costs are the same, but it's like, can you actually heal enough then at that point, or are you just going to run out of mana because your mana pool becomes very small, right? You know, there is like some world maybe in which you're just trying to stack all mana regeneration. You know, Freak talked a little bit about like, well, in the world where Yumi has a blue buff, it's just kind of just like a fantasy world, but like in a world where you have a blue buff, it's actually the same, right? But I do think, you know, in practice, it will be very difficult because you did rely so much on Presence of Mind and Manifold Ban to really become abusive late game and be able to just spam your heals out nonstop. So this could, I think, just completely remove Yumi from competitive play, whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, I think a lot of pros would say that's two thumbs up. I do think it's cool when we see champions like Yumi situationally. I don't think it's cool when it just becomes like you should pick this all the time. But I think it's probably going to be in the gutter after this one.
Yeah. I mean, the change is obviously targeted to get rid of the top off healing that you get, with her. And this is something that you go all the way back to, oh my God, I'm blanking on his name. I can see the picture, the Anivia picture on the forums. Oh my God. He had a long post about healing in League of Legends. Morello. I'm pretty sure. Was he the one who had the top off healing post way back in the day about how he doesn't like that whole archetype of like Soraka and people like that?
His item reduces healing.
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure it's him. But yeah, he, you know, and it's something I can totally agree with. Like you're in these like Baron standoff situations and like you chunk someone and Yumi goes zip and then heals them back up and it completely negates the last 20 seconds of gameplay.
What's that sound effect again?
Zoop. So I understand all that, but that is one of the power points of this champion was that like you just sat on your Olaf and made sure that whenever he ate poke, he was fine until you decided to go in.
Yeah.
And you can still use her probably pretty well with Olaf in the all-in situations, but in every other situation, it feels a lot weaker.
You're going to be I mean, realistically, in most situations, like I still think you're going to have to play Presence of Mind and Manifold Band, or you just didn't have any mana to do stuff before. You know, you're only going to have like a handful of spells to actually be able to really get anything done. And it's like, sure, if you are on Olaf and you start killing people off and getting Presence of Mind procs for all the mana back, then okay. But most situations, it's like the power is actually not about the Q. The power is about the heal, right? And especially in pro play, you know, everyone rushes the Athenes. And, you know, the Q is just amplifying your heal, right? That is where this champion becomes ridiculous is you Q, and every time the Q fills up your Athenes, and then your Athenes is this big bonus heal, and you're untargetable and great. If you're running out of mana, you're going to be pretty worthless.
Yeah, I actually think that this is one of the champions that there's not a great way to balance it until it gets a rework. And it's a pretty new champion. So I don't know about the rework process. Because to
how
me,
about this idea?
If you're nerfing it this way and you're just going to say, well, the Yumi player just can't do stuff as much. Like you just don't get to interact as much because you're going to run out of mana even if you build mana.
Before your point, Isaac, the problem with this from a design perspective that I see is that Yumi was designed to be the simple champion.
Yep.
And if you're making it so that you have to be extremely intelligent about mana usage, guess what? It's not that champion. It's not the sit on there and press E when someone takes, you know, damage anymore. It's press E at the right time now. And like some of those things that were supposed to be easy about the champion, like aren't there. You pop off, you have to auto and pop back on. It's not that complicated, but you know, it's like that wasn't now with the healing and all, like it's becoming a more complicated champion, which goes against what the whole point was a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's actually really hard to balance if you're trying to keep it this whole attach thing and really simple. I think that for pro play, there's lots of really cool things you could do, right? Like you can essentially make Yumi put herself at risk to have increased rewards, right? You know, it's like, what if there's a situation where the heal, you know, you can actually target people with your heal. And it does more when you're detached or whatever, right? Like, you know, so you bounce off and things like that. Or Yumi took a percentage of the damage dealt to the person she's attached to. So Yumi actually has to detach in fights and heal herself and then and reattach, things like that. Like that is something that I would see as really interesting, where it's like you're attached to an Olaf and half of the damage that the Olaf takes, or a third of the damage that the Olaf takes, is directed to you. And the only way you can heal yourself as a Yumi is actually detaching and healing, right? You know, things like that, I think, could be interesting and add some element of risk to what she's doing. Because that is, I think, the main issue, is that Yumi is not like putting herself at risk enough, right? And whether that is, you know, done through she takes damage, or she gets additional bonuses when she's detached, or when you CC the person she's attached to, she gets detached. There has to be some element of risk. That is what the champion is missing, and that is what I think people are really frustrated by.
Yeah, and an even more basic way is talking about counterplay. That's always something that they highlight really effectively, is champions can feel really good to use and can be powerful if playing against it, you feel like you've got good counterplay. Currently versus Yumi, your counterplay is you better build everyone. Some healing cutting. And if she happens to want to pop off and you for some reason found her popped off, hit her with a stun. That feels great to me. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, if I get that opportunity, I'm stunning her ass. That's my number one priority. So she can't jump on anybody. And you just feel so good. Like, I got you, idiot. You got cut off somebody. But
late game, she never detaches.
Yeah. The counterplay is such a big thing. And I feel like that's one of the main issues. That's why I'm like, okay, I think it might need a little rework or something before you can get to some nerfs that people actually feel good about, where you can use a champion still, or like, you know, get in kind of the middle ground. Mark, did you want to add something more on Yumi?
I think the ideas that Azale's talking about are all interesting ones, but it gets back to like, what's the identity of this champion? Because if it's supposed to be like an easy one, like new players it's are really not watching their health bars closely, and you're not going to realize that you're dying. You're like, so many new players are going to die attached to someone. And it's like, that's why this champ is such a problem for me, is like, I liked the idea of what they were trying to do, and it's just not really worked in my eyes of like new players.
Well, yeah, I mean, anytime you have like a something that's designed to be simple and you don't have to do that much, and then it's utilized extremely effectively by pros, that's gonna be too much. But anyways, I really liked this patch. We're having a lot of discussion about like ways to nerf and things that could have been
Go to your jungle thing. Let's do
done
it
differently. Just to recap though, I really liked how they nerfed a lot of the super strong pro champions. Aphelios, Ornn, Syndra, Yumi, even Kalista. All of these things, super high priority in professional play. And all of them got hit in pretty meaningful ways. Mm-hmm. But let's get into the laboratory. I do like Nocturne. I think I'll probably start playing some more Nocturne. Because your bus rate is just better clear speed. But what I've been trying to do for a while, ever since they added all the weird, Darius has more damage to jungle monsters and Gnar has more damage to jungle monsters. I've been trying to get Gnar gameplay in the jungle, and it has not been great. But whenever it feels like this is one of the champions they're not giving up on buffing. And let me cast your memory back to Ekko. There was a period of time for about 4 or 5 months where you could tell every consecutive patch had an Ekko buff on it. And I'm like, they really want people to play Ekko and Ekko to show back up in pro play or something, because there's like 4 or 5 consecutive buffs to it. And then it got to the point where they're like, all right, Ekko is one of the ranked junglers right now, and we gotta tone him back down. I feel like Gnar is one of those champions right now, because 10-4, they gave him the buff. 10-8, they give him a buff. 10-9, they give him a buff. 10-13, they're giving him another buff. This most recent one is the attack speed on hop, which isn't, you know, super big for jungle, but you can use it for more clear speed when you are mini. And it's just a good buff to the champion overall. So every patch, when they have the Gnar buff, I'm getting back in there. I'm testing again until it works, because Gnar is actually a really fun champion to play just by itself also. And coming from the jungle, he does have a lot of options, even though before I was doing Warrior, I'm going to also try Cinderhulk and see if I can be a bit of
like timing boy. Your Mega Gnar for ganks and stuff would be pretty tough, though.
I'm surprised this was your takeaway with Gnar. I'm like, he's one of Volibear's worst matchups, and we're seeing tons of Volibear, and he's getting buffed. I know he's weak right now and stuff.
You're surprised that I want to use a shiny new thing in the jungle, Mark?
I didn't think that you wanted that shiny new thing. That's like a shine. I don't even know.
Kobe wants everything. He wants everything in the jungle.
Yeah,
wants,
I'm like,
Kobe's down for the Yumi jungle.
I thought he was going to talk about Nunu got buffed. I thought I was going to talk about Nunu. You know,
AP, this, Vi goes AP.
Vi got buffed. I don't know. That's, but I didn't think it was Gnar. I didn't think that's where we were going with the Gnar buffs. I thought we were going to talk about Volley Bear counter. You know,
one thing I will say about the direction they've taken with Gnar and why I'm really happy that, you know, it's, you talk about the number of buffs, and I know a lot of people have been talking about that. What I have noticed is that they have done very, very minor bumps in the direction that they want. And I'm way happier to see it be like, ooh, it gets a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here, right? And I know people always meme these kind of things like, aha, two base AD or like whatever, right? It's like, yeah, I'd rather see four of those and it gets slowly to the appropriate point instead of they're just like, well, I think if we give him a fifth ability, he'll be pretty good, you know? And then it's like, oh, crap, he has an 80% win rate, you know? Like, I like the little nudges in the right direction instead of just, like, go for the home run.
So, Volibear that went from the lowest win rate jungle to the highest win rate jungle after the hotfix plus
buff.
One patch. I think, and everybody,
untouched.
Everybody's gonna agree with that. I think nobody likes, you know, something coming out of nowhere to be the new king.
And the Volibear one, I think, is a little bit different situation because I know that, you know, from spending a lot of time talking to the designers and working playtests and doing all these things and in the past, is that there was a lot of data that suggested that if a new champion or a rework or whatever comes out and isn't like popular at the start, like isn't getting a lot of play, it pretty much never recovers. Like just people just don't play this champion because most people give something a shot at the start and then they form their opinion on it and then that's their opinion on it, unless there's some like major shift, you know, like that really kind of pushes things in the other direction. So that I know is why, you know, if a new champion or a rework comes out and is hot garbage, as the Volibear was, to be honest, then they are going to quickly be like, all right, make this thing good so people will try it out. And you know, and make sure that like if they like the play style, then they like the play style, and then we'll fine tune, you know, as we have more time. But they don't want to leave like a new champion in the gutter for a couple patches in a row, because then no one plays it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I also like the slower patch changes, but things like Yumi or like, you know, real problem champs, you want to take them out at the knees, I'm with you.
You got that red button meme?
Yeah, I'm like. Break glass
off with their head. the other one I kind of noticed, and this is a little bit smaller, but the guardian nerf, because I really do like guardian. I think it's not that big of a deal because, you know, it's like, okay, at level 18 it's 50 less late game, the, like, you know, 50 isn't going to make that big a difference, and you're almost never actually getting to level 18 as a support anyway. Like, that's like a, you know, 1 in 100 games. So I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. But I do think that it makes some sense that it's getting nudged. I know in pro, at least the opinions I've seen from pro players seems to be like much more negative on Guardian. But like, Guardian is so high win rate on a lot of champions, and not just melee champions. Like, I've actually been taking Guardian on a lot of enchanters and things like that in the bottom lane against like all in champs. Like, if you're playing Lulu or even Janna or Nami or any of these champs, Morgana, against any sort of all-in lane, Guardian is pretty much always the best thing you can actually go for, you know, especially now that you can actually just build like the Relic Shield options. You have a little bit of health there. You have the Guardian Shield, and you can end up getting like fairly tanky just with that. And being Guardian allows you to go into like bone plating and overgrowth and things like that too, where it becomes actually very difficult to all-in the Enchanter. And if you can't do that, it's like, you know, these champions are incredibly, incredibly powerful in team fights.
Yeah. I think, it's one of those runes that is easy to use, which makes it a lot better in solo queue. And I can understand why pros might want a higher impact, more difficult to use rune.
Well, you just got louder, Mark.
Did I? I don't think I did anything.
You sound great, Mark.
Thanks. I don't know what I did. But yeah. Like the same way we talk about champions being balanced, you know, that applies for runes and setups and items. And Guardian is just so easy to use now.
Yeah. I think this one is clearly one of the ones where balancing, they set out tiers with that they're going to balance for. And since it is so easy and it's just flat shield health amount, this one's not being balanced because of pro. This one's being balanced more because of solo queue.
Speaking of pro.
Get in there, Mark.
All right, are you okay with me doing the transition? I don't do many transitions. Oh, actually, wait. I jumped the gun. I forgot about that. I messed it up. Oh, okay. See you guys. You take care.
Never, never again. Something else that has actually been talked about quite a bit lately is kind of toxicity in games, and one of the changes that I'm actually really excited about is going to start getting tested or coming out in 10.13, and this is actually Champ Select. Muting and message blocking and reporting. That is something that I think people have wanted for so long. I'm actually really, really happy about this because it's so annoying when you have to mute a player in game and they're being super toxic and annoying or whatever. And it's like you come out in a champ select and then they can just start flaming again and talking to you and they're no longer muted.
Yeah, you're spamming your Alt F4. Yeah, you're spamming your escape.
I don't want to see it.
I already know. Get me out of here. I don't want to see it anymore. Yeah. Completely agree. Especially because sometimes even at the beginning of the game, you get right into champ select and you just hit.
People are saying they're gonna hold champ select hostages and stuff. Yeah. I'm excited for this. And I don't know if this is just like my bad experiences or getting a little bit unlucky, because I know there is just like, okay, sometimes you just get bad streaks of being with some rough players or rough teammates or whatever. But I have been experiencing a lot of like toxicity and just like kind of like holding games hostage and this type of thing, it's been so much.
It's just you. I don't know what you're talking about. All my games have zero toxicity in them.
All positive mental attitude. But I've been getting a lot of like, the score is 4-2, but the 2 is my top laner's deaths and he wants out. And it's like FF15, team 1 FF15, he's going to run it down the sideline till the end of the game. Like I was having so many AFKs, so many of that. And normally like, I don't feel like I get that much of it. Yes, it is an element that exists in every multiplayer game I've ever played, and it's extremely frustrating, and it completely ruins my game when it happens. I actually even think it ruins my game when it happens on the other team, to be honest, because I don't really enjoy playing out a game where someone's just inting and you're just waiting for it to end. You already know what the result is. Like, the fun for me of League of Legends is, like the fight to win, right? Like that kind of battle. And if it's already a predetermined result because someone's inting either on their team or my team, I want out, and I want out now. And like, just get me to the next game. So I'm hoping that this, will maybe push the needle a little bit. If you can, report people in champ select and post game lobbies, maybe get some of these people who are being a little bit more egregious in trouble.
Yeah, I would say there's an important bullet there that says for now, champ select reporting is only in place to collect data. Mm-hmm. And they're using that data to plan out their further investment. So it's a phase one type of deal.
But hope it goes well.
It's so long overdue, man. Like the amount of games and stuff that go bad in champ select and like you like report and then you have to type in, it's like 30 minutes later, you have to type in like, yeah, they said this stuff in champ select. Like it's so removed from like when it happened that I'm excited for the champ select mute button and also report button.
Yes. I have liberally been using the mute all and it has resulted in better climbing. So I can just do mute all even earlier now.
Perfect.
All right. Speaking of pro play.
Mark, it's your time to shine.
Speaking of pro play.
We weren't talking about pro play, Mark.
Speaking of pro play, let's talk about the LCS. Guys,
transitions.
This week, why don't we try and talk about teams a little differently? We'll talk about whether or not.
Let's do it, Mark. That sounds fun.
Why don't we try talking about them if they're over or underperforming to our preseason expectations from a power rankings idea.
That's good.
I'm glad we've got Mark here, Zale.
Me too.
I just smooth all those little wrinkles out. That's what I'm here for. I'm the glue guy. I just keep things moving.
Glue out the wrinkles in the brain over there.
Yeah.
Those have been well ironed out.
So Golden Guardians. What do you guys think? What's up with Golden Guardians these days?
Well, Mark. They did lose their last two games back to back, but I still haven't decided for
it. Isn't it?
Huh? Yeah. In addition to last week, but the new news is that they lost the previous ones, and one a bit surprising that you might not suspect, the one versus CLG. Are you guys? Because I know I was personally, especially coming out last week, And their only loss was the loss to Team Liquid. I was still super excited. And I was kind of invigorated to see this team really embrace the Demonte and closer combination. You know, closer, super aggressive carry. They want to put him up as, all right, we're going to play a lot of power farmer, you know, take over the game junglers, Graves and Nidalee type of thing. And we're going to have Demonte also on some sort of a aggressive champion where he can go for kill pressure or roaming with closer. And they kind of want to embrace this style. I still like that's their identity. I still have excitement for them, but did last weekend bring it back down to
reality? Are you saying they're underperforming for you or overperforming?
I would say that with the change, it is underperforming of my new perception, but it is overperforming since, you know, bringing in Demonte from last split. So my answer is going to be that they're underperforming right now, because I expect this team to have an upward trajectory with the new roster and with a new identity.
So I would agree. I'm going to say underperforming. You know, I think I would be much more negative, but their loss to C9 actually gave me some hope. I think that was actually their best played game of the year. And it was in a loss, but you're against C9. And that actually felt like a composition where they had clear direction, where they had clear win conditions, where they were, you know, willing to go at C9 to fight them nonstop. And I thought it was really smart. I thought they made some, you know, some major mistakes, like trying to defend that tier one tower bottom where when Closer was backing off, and it was already going to be like a 3v4, but then Closer was farming his jungle, you know, farming the Krugs beside it. So then it was a 2v4. So clearly there was some issues still there. But like, that felt like a good direction for them to go. If they can replicate that level of gameplay against other teams, they'll beat most other teams in the league with that play style. But previous to that, I was actually really disappointed with their play, despite the fact that Closer had been kind of running over the early game on Nidalee and having some really impressive performances there. You know, they're obviously prioritizing his picks. Like, he kept playing into Trundles and he got Graves and slammed Dignitas, which we now know Dignitas is, you know, one of the worst teams in leagues. But the next two games on Nidalee, even with big advantages against TL and stuff, it just felt like Golden Guardians had no idea how to play out a poke composition later on in the game. You know, they were drafting very heavily for poke. They did Nidalee Jace. They did, you know, I think Zoe Nidalee. They had Ezreal in there for some of the games. And it felt like even with these massive leads in the early games, they're just like, oh, what now? And every game kind of felt like sitting back and not really being sure how to progress the game state, not really sure how to actually go anywhere with it. I mean, against TL, they were... Yeah, they had a Flame Horizon in the jungle, they got Ocean Soul, and their late game comp was like so poor that they couldn't actually fight it out still.
Yeah, I'm definitely in the underperforming camp, because if you extrapolate their season, you know, I don't think they'll finish basically 4-16 would be if you, you know, just timed it by four. But like around that number, you know, that just doesn't feel like where they would be, 4-12 or something like that. Like, that feels too low. I know it'd be 4-14, but I'm just saying multiply by four. But I think they should do better. They do look better than their record, but I wonder how many of their late game decision making and macro problems are masked by bad drafts right now, because so many of their drafts have been early game focused, like you're saying, or poke comps that are hard to execute in the late game. And then their game versus C9, where they did have a good comp, they were still losing late game fights where like they'd all turbo dive in to kill Sven, kill him, and then have no other backup plan and stuff like that. I think they're better than they've shown, but even if they shore up their drafts and beat some of the lower tier teams, I am still concerned about their late game, because there's nothing about them that screams this should be a good late game team. You know, like, it's a lot of younger talent or veterans who are not in their peak form anymore, I guess you would say. So like, I am still a little hesitant to call Golden Guardians like a for sure mid-tier team, but I do think they're better than their record.
So I would say to both of your guys' points, they have not been drafting or trying to be a late game team. So the Team Liquid example that you're giving in their big lead, they're playing against a team that is definitely going to outscale them. Mm-hmm. And so I think the criticism is
they should have closed.
Should be pinpointed on that mid game and pushing ahead, because they made a couple of mistakes early. I remember casting this game, and they give up a kill bottom lane. Plus they messed up the first dragon. And when you're trying to be the team that has more pressure on you to win early, messing up early, giving a kill bottom, and losing the first dragon is a huge hurdle to get over. And so they eventually got to this point where they still got it back and they got a pretty big lead, But I think that one of the biggest mistakes was allowing Team Liquid to just kind of walk up to them and get that team fight, right? That's where I was like, oh my God, Impact. He's walking up to them on Mordekaiser and then forcing these fights, you know, grabbing somebody multiple times. And I was just like, he just won the game for Team Liquid. You know, he's getting the fights for the Aphelios with frontline team. And I thought that was big. So I would probably say Golden Guardians, you know, they have, for me, a good game plan. And I like their direction because I want more teams to say, all right, we're going to play the riskier game style. We are going to try and be the exciting, you know, attack you early, take over the game, and finish before you outscale us style. So I hope that they are underperforming and they have an upward trajectory because they, you know, if they look back and improve on these games and they can make that style better, then we'll have more teams that are following in the footsteps of Cloud9 and trying to push our region more that way, is kind of how I felt about it.
All right.
Italy, by the way, in the LCS, I believe she is 0-5 now. So not a lot of teams have had success pushing ahead with the Nidalee style. LCK was good. I watched a Peanut game in the LPL as well. Peanut still got it for Nidalee.
I saw him tweet out that he got a game MVP.
Yeah. examine some of the successes, I think. There is footage out there for...
It has a 48% win rate or something, including NA dragging it down. I think it's
exactly think it's 50 around 40. Now,
but ours is 0%, by the way.
Yeah, we're not helping that. We're making the champ look balanced.
And I don't think it is, you know, one of these overpowered champions, actually, you know, to your point, because there are Graves and Olaf are like easier to play a very similar style. I think Nidalee is definitely more difficult because you have to transition into this weird position where you start out as super aggressive power farm jungler. You want to be able to do 1v1s and have these, you know, strong AP ganks. But then later you're like, I buy my Athenes now and I become half support, right? And heal our carries, give them the steroid, and you know, you have to choose your time to commit.
I think the other thing, to be fair, is you got to look a lot at the teams that played it, right? It's 2 Akkadian losses, 2 Closer losses, and then Wiggly when they got perfect game.
Yep.
So, you know, we haven't had any of our top teams playing it. But, you know, moving on, another team I think that has been underperforming quite a lot is 100 Thieves. Yes, they did have a really tough strength of schedule, as everyone is really quick to identify and talk about. You know, their first three games were arguably against three of the best teams in the league. But this is a team that finished, what, second, third in the regular season last split. I think expectations are fairly high for them. I think expectations are that they should at least be competitive near the top, maybe not against Cloud9, but against everyone else. And I don't think that they have looked actually competitive against those top three teams. It felt like they were getting completely run over. I really didn't like their drafting in a lot of the games. I do think that their last game, you know, did feel like a lot better. But it was against, you know, a pretty lower level team. It was against Immortals, who was one of the weakest teams in the league, and they got, you know, the Sunday Renekton, kind of like a good matchup there, and played through that. And that's more what I was expecting. And I know there's always kind of this argument with 100 Thieves around, like, Sunday's your best player. Should you be playing through him and emphasizing him, or should you be using him to, like, hide draft deficiencies elsewhere by, like, blind picking him? But when they're just doing, you know, they did multiple Ornn blind picks that didn't work. And game three was the most egregious to me because I'm always against this situation where you're saving your pick for last and you're
you
on
don't like
side.
The Aatrox into Ornn.
No, this pick's horrible.
Pick Aatrox into Ornn.
That's that's literally just like a 50-50 matchup that you wouldn't have known who blind picked, right? You know, and I think that's something where it's like, oh my God, you just completely threw away your red side advantage. Yeah. That's terrible. And that's something that I think almost every region in the world, there are some exceptions, but almost every team, except for those outside of the LPL, where they're more aggressively counterpicking. And then I guess we see some, you know, maybe from like some of the really good European teams like G2 or something. But in general, people are not getting enough out of red side. And that is why in the past, when we've looked at win rates, LPL has always done like way better on the red side because they're willing to like take the Fiora into the tank or do whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say on that one, I was really hoping for like the Kayle top because they also had good junglers for it. They had an Olaf and the enemy had a Graves, and the Graves Ornn combination isn't something you have to be as worried about if
if you have the Olaf to try and get Kale at least to the six. And if you can split the jungle, it does so much. And I kind of want 100 Thieves, and I would like press an identity on them, but I want them to be the team that just commits to top carries. Mm-hmm. You know, have one of our teams go in all in on this strategy. I want to diversify our team so that, you know, we have the different camps of identities. Like, all right, Golden Guardians, you're going to do the super jungle carry with you and Damante trying to be mini Cloud9. And I want 100 Thieves, all right, you know, commit to someday utilizing Fiora and Kale and all these types of carries and win a game that way. So that we can really explore those avenues and have our teams make each other better rather than, all right, we're also going to do Ornn top and Azir mid and Aphelios bottom, and we're going to 5-on-5 you.
I think we all agree 100 Thieves is underperforming to spring expectations, but counterpoint, they overperformed in spring. And this is more what you would expect, because I think you can say they have, you know,
they got trashed in those games, in the first three games.
Yeah, they got trashed. But I'm saying, like, they have real weaknesses in their roster, I think. And people point to Ryoma and Stunt. You know, they started playing better at the end of the last split when they went on their run, but that doesn't mean it's always, you know, going to be that way, or they might not have a step backwards. Meteos is definitely not playing as well right now. So, like, those are things that if they can get back to their form in spring, sure, but this could also be not an underperformance.
His Olaf game. I just remembered the last Olaf game. I was just like, oh my goodness. I felt so bad for him. You just see like three instances of them like start an objective, and then Meteos is like, oh crap, you know, like tries to ult and run out, or he gets Blitzcrank pulled and then tries to ult and run out, and you're just like, that's the saddest little Olaf that I've ever
well
seen.
and there was the Khaleesi game against TL. You know, they should have just had the Baron, and somehow they messed it up. One of the most guaranteed secures in the game, probably the most, behind maybe Cho'Gath.
Yeah,
it's not looking good. Sorry, that was not a good note to end on. Get me out.
You're supposed to be the 100 Thieves rep right now, Mark, by the way. I see
you're literally wearing 100 Thieves, Mark.
So what do you mean? There's no... I can still see it. It's a Cloud9 chair behind me.
Bring us back on an uplifting note, because they got the hard strength of schedule out of the way at the beginning while they were also struggling. Yeah. So I think that you can correlate, and you'll have an easier schedule, plus you'll be improving. That will get, you know, morale up on the team at the same time. And I feel like we can have...
Here, I got a positive note for you. How about Dignitas? I don't think they're underperforming. I just think they're that bad.
How is that positive?
Not underperforming. They're doing great. Playing to expectations.
I think they'd rather be underperforming.
They probably think they're performing. I don't know, man. I think that
they for sure do.
Dignitas and Immortals have looked so bad, and almost like irredeemably bad. It has been really disappointing. You know, I was actually really excited for Acadian coming into this split. And I do think it is underperforming. I'm kind of just joking. Because Acadian in the past had looked really good on power farmers, and that had kind of been his style where he made his name for himself. So I was kind of hopeful that he could have a resurgence. Yeah, Graves. Yeah, that's the one that always kind of stuck out to me. But both his Nidalee games were so bad. It just felt like he wasn't getting any sort of an advantage. He had it into Trundle, you know, really wasn't able to get any sort of an edge there. And, you know, it just doesn't feel like he's playing with that killer instinct that I do think you need when you're playing, especially a champion like Nidalee, where you need to be aggressive, you need to be farming your opponent's jungle. It felt like he was, you know, either nervous or being too passive or whatever, but he was kind of just sitting back and power farming his own jungle. I don't think their roster swaps have done them any favors. You know, I don't think that Viper is looking good at all. You know, Dignitas just seems like an absolute mess.
Yeah, I mean... Huni, for all the things people can complain about him, which are, you know, probably pretty fair, he is still talent-wise very good and skill like level, and he has a great mind. He has a great mind about the game, and like, there's no world where Viper is an upgrade over Huni in my mind. So like, yeah, Dignitas is going to do worse than last split. Okay, yeah, he's cheaper, as you're saying, and so like, I don't think that their players are all like permanently 9th, 10th place team. So in that sense, I would say, yeah, sure, some of the players are underperforming. But when you show me this roster, ninth and struggling to pick up wins is exactly what I think they are, to your point about why I wouldn't say that they're underperforming. Not to say that Johnson and Afro didn't have some good plays and like on other teams could be on a much higher team. The players to me are not ninth place across the board in their positions. But this combination just to me will not succeed in summer. And that's why we all pretty much universally had them power rank super low.
Yeah. That's why I put them as underperforming, because I don't have, you know, a super hard high bar for them. Excuse me.
But they're still under it
after their roster swaps. But I'm trying to take away some positives from the week. And that's our whole point of doing overperforming, underperforming. We can have lower bars for the lower teams. Afromu and Johnson.
They were really good.
Exactly. That actually got me excited in something. Yeah. In some of the games where you are looking for these kind of shining lights. And it was cool to see Afromu making a lot of plays with the Thresh and him partnered with Johnson, who was last split one of the guys we were hyping up as some of the influx of new talent and top of solo queue. Those are the type of things you want to get excited for. Obviously, they still have a lot to improve on. I think they can do better. I don't think they're going to, you know, surpass a lot of the teams in wins or make a super high charge up the ladder, but we can see improvements.
Yeah, I mean, if Afro and Johnson can maintain that level of play, like that's a duo that, you know, like I think Mark said, you could do really well on another team with another roster surrounding them. So I'm at least excited for that. It feels good to see Afro doing well, because, you know, he had a bit of a downturn since, you know, he won MVP not that long ago. And he has stretched it on the years now. But it's been a downturn for him, right? It feels good to see him doing well again. You know, he's always been, you know, kind of one of the most recognizable faces in the LCS.
Yeah. All right. So here's a interesting one. Cloud9 at the very top, smashing everybody.
Underperforming. I mean, what can you say about Cloud9 at this point? They're clearly the best team in the league. They have such great individual players and synergy and drafting. You know, I think you could say that they've made more mistakes this split. I think Blabber has made a lot more, even in their first game versus FlyQuest that they won, his invade. You know, Jack was popping off at us for like, how come my boys aren't getting the players of the week?
Yeah,
and it's like, well, maybe you're getting solo killed. And it's like, you know, some players, you know, like they have such a great roster that we hold them to this higher standard a little bit, which is why the bar is up here, to your point about talking to these teams. From the bar that they set last split, I do think it's fair to say that they're underperforming a little bit.
So they're when you look at the team as a whole and the results, they're still just absolutely crushing every single game, including against EG, who looks to be the second best team, you know, in my opinion. So I think as a team, I wouldn't say that they're underperforming, but I do think they are having some of those kind of like boneheaded moments or whatever you want to call it. And yeah, you know, I was just running back and forth with Jack a bit. And I think one of the things that, as much as people say, oh, Cloud9 gets the raw deal there, you know, on some of these things, because it's like, oh, one small play, you know, one small misstep on Cloud9 and your team's so good that now you can't win player of the week or you can't win this, or, you know, people like aren't going to give you the credit. But the other end of that I don't really hear people talk about almost at all is that when you're on a team that's that good, you get away with stuff that you don't get to get away with on bad teams. Like when Blabber, you know, that Trundle game, when he just like charges into the river with like full knowledge of everyone being around and it ends up being like a 1-for-3, right? And it was like he ran it down. Like that was a terrible play. And he made up for it the rest of the game and played great. But if you are on Dignitas or Immortals or even some of these middle of the pack teams, that game is over now. You don't get to try again. You don't get to come back from some of these big mistakes, right? You know, if Licorice, if he's on a bad team and he's playing Jason of Olibear and gets solo killed,
Karma's not coming up to top lane to save it.
Yeah, you're probably going to lose the game. And you know what we're going to probably talk about at the end of the day at the analyst desk is, well, they counterpicked for top and they got solo killed. And that's, you know, and there goes your win condition. So that's the thing that people don't always take into consideration as well. There are going to be mistakes that happen because Cloud9 plays crazy aggressive. They're clearly by far the best team in the league. But, you know, it's silly to pretend that there's not a benefit to your play when you have this good of a team because they can make up for each other's blunders, and you can initiate a fight that's really bad and have another player on the team just completely outplay it and make that a winning fight, and all of a sudden it looks good.
And the final point I'll throw on this is that, like, you, when you get these 2-0 weeks from other teams, it's not like C9 versus this one other team. It's C9 versus every other team in the league when you're comparing what the players have done. And so, like, if Blaber makes a mistake and they still get 2-0, but then there's another team that went 2-0 and their best player didn't really make mistakes that weekend, that person's probably going to be the one to pick it up.
I think it is important for us and for Reaper to be the super strict parent and say, you must deliver A pluses to me all summer long, because this is our, you know, our firstborn that we want to send to represent us at Worlds and gain some accolades, you know, take over.
So we stop getting bullied.
So I agree. And I'll also put them as underperforming because, you know, we have these super high standards and we want to keep them also looking at any points for improvement. It can be super hard. And
yeah,
all players over the years have talked about when they are on the dominating team, it becomes difficult to look for these areas of improvement when you can just be like, ah, well, we won the game anyway. But they should still keep these critical eyes on anything that they can find to improve. Because again, like, I really want them so badly at an international event. We got robbed not getting to see them at MSI. And this is my big hope for our whole region.
And the one thing I'll throw in there is that it's not like C9 didn't have these kinds of games in spring either. So, like, when we say, like, underperforming, it's not like,
well, I don't even think that they're underperforming as a team. I think that they actually are really good. I kind of disagree with that take.
All right. Yeah. I'm saying, like, if this is like the bar that we hold them to, they're like here, you know, like, they're just like,
yeah,
it's been some games where Blaber has killed himself both weeks. And that's basically what we're talking about. And it's Licorice eat a minion backwards and have one misclick that we're harping on, you know, like, these are really nitpicky things. And they had games last year, like the TSM game that they won, where they lost a 2v2 mid and, like, Blaber killed himself. And then they're still the best team in the league by a mile.
It may be unreasonable, but I want them to be perfect. Is that unreasonable?
My favorite play of the whole split was that Blaber kick, right? That, like, insane Blaber kick in the base where then Licorice just dugs the guy away immediately to safety. They have mistakes like that at times, but they're clearly by far the best team in the region. So you have to hold them at a high standard. That's why we're being critical. CLG, though, overperforming, I would say, by a lot. Was talking about Jack. So credit to Jack. I saw him actually put them pretty high in his power rankings. He was the only person I really saw that. So, I had heard that they had been doing pretty well in scrims and maybe, you know, some of the reasons that we thought that they would be good in spring are now materializing, because this was a team that, like, back in last year's summer actually looked pretty good. And then we're like, oh my God, they got Crown, you know, they got Smoothie, they're going to be even better. Or at least, you know, they were telling us it was going to fix a lot of their issues. Then they became abysmal. Now they've had some time. So maybe some time with the team, you know, is allowing them to gel, is allowing things to really start clicking. I don't think that they're going to be a top team still. I do think that they're going to be mid or lower end of the pack. But we had them, all of us had them between 8th, 9th, and 10th, right? And they were our aggregate, like, 8th or 9th. So I do think they're overperforming, and I think they should be pretty happy about it. They've already equaled their amount of wins from spring. They're 3-1 versus they were 3-15.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that you should remember the strength of schedule. I think they have by far the easiest schedule because they played both Immortals.
But even given that, they went 3-15. They lost those teams last time.
I know. And you're the one who placed them 10th. So.
Yeah.
I put them 8th. I believed in them.
just do remember that. However, the tangible improvements are really there. And that's why I also think that they are overperforming. And I'm glad to see these improvements in the team. They did make some changes, putting up Exogen into the coaching staff as well. And I know Jack placed a lot of his power rankings on, like, the scrims that Cloud9 had against people. Mm-hmm. And that's why some of the players also were talking about CLG being a lot better this split and being surprised in their first week when they lost so convincingly. And so, the most convincing way, getting perfect gamed. So I definitely project them to be better than last split. But you can still say they're overperforming from last split, and you need to give them credit for these improvements, because you don't just jump up to the top. It's it's incremental improvements. You're going to have to go up a couple rungs on the ladder first. So I'm definitely happy and excited to see the improvements here.
Yeah, it really depends on the bar, because, you know, if the bar is like we all had them in the bottom eight teams in the league, they're probably gonna, if I had to say right now, if I think they're gonna finish better than 100 Thieves, who I had above them, I think they will actually. And like, that doesn't make it an overperformance if my opinion changes. But to Kobe's point about the record, if you do that kind of extrapolation again and they're finishing 14-4 or, you know, 12-6, that does still feel a little bit too high for me. So I still slot into the overperformance. And I am a little bit concerned about the Volibear picks, because Rune's really good about picking up new champions, and people seem drastically underprepared for Volibear this, you know, this weekend, where they're taking Mordekaisers into it and like a lot of matchups that will struggle into Volibear, and just, you know, it didn't feel like people were ready, and CLG abused them really hard for that, and Rune popped off this week. He was definitely in the player of the week discussions, that's why I'm still a little waiting for the other foot to drop, like Kobe, when they get to harder competition, when there's less volatility in drafts. You know, even they themselves fell to it once with the full poke comp.
I also really like that they've adapted the Twisted Fate. I think we're pointing out specifics in their strategy, they really should be getting credit for a lot of things they're trying. Poe Belter on Twisted Fate, this is a champion that he spams in solo queue, so he's very well equipped to immediately take it with the, you know, Twisted Fate being used all over the world. I think they're also playing to their player strengths. So that's why I kind of mentioned some of the changes that have gone on in CLG. I know, especially from the outside, everybody's like, oh my God, they still have all the same players. But, you know, they are making a lot of improvements in the strategy and in some of the ways that they're managing the team. So do like that. Let's move on.
How about some of the top teams then? You know, like FlyQuest, EG, TL, those are the teams that are kind of in the argument for like who's the best after Cloud9. What do you guys think about some of these guys?
Well, I think after EG's victory over Team Liquid, I think for most people they're the contenders. Also because the way they play in 1-3-1 with Jizuke, again, they're still showing like, we are one of the best teams, at least in North America, at pulling this off. So I'm definitely excited for EG. And it comes back to my theme of like, all right, I want unique identities for each team to push the others. And it feels like EG is going to be this one for us to really spread the map.
I'll put them underperforming. I didn't like their casted in mid. I thought it made them look worse against C9 than they really are. The same way CLG's bad draft for their first game. You know, like this is one where you take one of the weakest pre-6 mid laners champions and give it to your playmaker, and then against C9, who's great in the early game. I understood the idea, and I actually don't hate the idea. I just didn't like the execution of it with like his greedy runes and stuff like that. Yeah. But overall, I think it made them look a lot worse than they actually are. So in some sense, I could even say that they're underperforming.
I mean, they absolutely dumped on TL, right? You know, they got slammed by C9, but then they basically did to TL what C9 did to them. And you know, I think I was way more positive on the Kassadin pick than other people. I still think that there is even if EG is the clear second team, I still think that there's clearly a big gap between them and Cloud9. Cloud9 is obviously, you know, our very best team by a lot. I do think that the runes and the item buy and everything from Jizuke was kind of foolish. You know, he went Conqueror. That is very much a late game thing. On Kassadin, you know, not going Fleet, not starting Doran's. I think that was really, really greedy. I do like, though, like, so I'm just going to ignore that. I'm just going to talk more about the Kassadin pick as a whole. Yes, it is into Karma Olaf, which is incredibly scary, but this is a real win condition. If you're able to defend the Kassadin and actually, you know, keep him safe in the early game, that 1v1 becomes incredibly Kassadin favored once you have some levels and you're, you know, you're even just like your tier catalyst. Karma can't really hurt you that much anymore when Karma is going for a defensive build like that, when he's going for a supportive build. Cloud9 also had almost no CC at all. So, yes, is it risky? Of course it's risky. Cloud9 is the best early snowballing team. They had strong early game. But if EG was able to defend this champion and get a 16, I actually just think you win off the Kassadin. I think Kasten just completely takes over against a team like that that has no CC. It becomes so easy. So like, I think it was, you know, a swinging for the fences type of situation. I think EG went into this saying, all right, we have a 20% chance to win or whatever, but if we can perfect this Kasten, then we're going to win. And it didn't work out. And that's kind of how most stuff looks against C9, because they just run over you. But I actually really like the idea, and I do think that Kasten can actually fit into a lot of drafts, especially against low CC teams like that. If it's not Cloud9 running that, I think that, you know, you can survive probably and win late.
Yeah, I'm just gonna have to agree to disagree here, and I think that's fine. For me, choosing that, and to me, Kasten is one of the most Hail Mary, all right, we got to get to 16. And then we get, oh, yes, there is a pot of gold at the end. You get your castle win at level 16.
Big pot of gold, Kobe.
But to me,
it's a big rainbow, too, to get
there. I'm like, I'm squinting. I can't even see that shit. Like, that is so freaking far away. And you're doing it against Cloud9, who has destroyed every single team much earlier. I would rather index a little bit less in the pot of gold at the end, at the benefit of not having as big of a hole. And you can change and get, you know, Doran's Shield and a little bit safer of runes. I don't think that changes the early game as much. It would certainly help a bit, but I don't think that that actually changes the early game that much, because especially Blabber on Olaf, like you're already seeding so much to the team that is best at finishing out these games really early, stacking dragons, running over mid lane. So, and it's not like the Olaf is going to fall off either, because part of the thing that Cloud9 does is draft so much around allowing Olaf to scale through teammates. You know, Karma and Yumi beefing him up and allowing Olaf to operate later into the game. So that's why, to me, looking for my dream Kasten 16 that much later is just way too late.
So, I mean, 16, I think you just like auto win in a lot of situations. I don't think that Kasten is useless earlier than that, though. That's the one thing I will say. Actually, like, I think that Kasten can actually be pretty strong early on, even when you just have, you know, Catalyst here. You can actually start being relevant. You know, obviously you're not going to take over the game, but like against low CC comps, you can have some
impact. Yeah, saying useless would be hyperbole, and usually is, but the amount of influence is definitely so much lower versus Jace, Olaf, Karma, Ezreal, Yumi. Like, yeah,
I just know that people I hear that so much from the community, and like having played it a lot and talked to some people who play it, like I actually think it's, you can start winning a lot of matchups like once you have tier Catalyst. You don't need everything. Like he got so trashed. Like people talk about the dive, and like Doran's Shield isn't going to protect you from that dive where you're getting 3-man collapsed on from all sides. You're going to die because that was pre-6 and that was really well executed. But he was like half CS before that. And that's what, you know, like
lost his turret at 10.
Yeah. Like that's what it, you know, the different setup might have been able to protect him from, is getting that trash. Like you're going to take some deaths, you're going to take some L's, but if you can actually hold on in the 1v1 and be getting farm, then there's always that, like that, you know, that relevance.
You're not going to convince me, and it's fine to have our both, you know, our
let us know fans, in the comments down below who you say.
But Mark, you gotta be choose a side here.
Just call
I see
Kobe.
Both sides. You both have your merits in what you're
call
saying.
Call Kobe a 3. I'm guessing it them. All right.
I'm DMing both of you separately to be like, I secretly agree with you.
All right. What about FlyQuest? So, you know, most people are saying, yeah, like clearly EG's above TL. Like I posted some kind of just like sarcastic power rankings after the last weekend. And you know, I had like C9 way up there, and then a big ladder, and then EG, and then a big ladder, and then TL and FlyQuest. And the one comment I did get was, ooh, FlyQuest could be just as good or better than EG from, and I got that from a number of people. So like, what's your guys' take there?
It's hard for me to place FlyQuest a little bit. Obviously they went against C9 and looked okay. They had a game versus Immortals where they kind of struggled more than they should. Then they played TSM, who had that Garbo draft. And then they played Dig and beat them. So, like, I actually have such a hard time when I look at what their drafts were, who they were playing. you know, they look fine to my eyes, even if like in that Immortals game, they were playing way too aggressive, like with POA flash ulting in after the Rakan already missed his stuff and like the scrappiness for C9. It's like, I just have a really hard time placing them. I think they're good. I think all their players are very talented. There's no real holes where I'm like, that guy is a liability. So I do like them a lot, but
both of you guys have them second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Power,
so that's
power rankings at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. That's why I'm thinking, that's why I'm struggling with this, because I'm not convinced they're the second best team in the league right now. I'm not convinced they'll still be the second best team in the league right now. Projecting their record forward, I actually think that they could end up more middle of the pack-ish, but I could also see them doing better. So I'm kind of like,
here, let me step in and help you out with at least making the cut off this. Would you agree? You know, Cloud9 tier is by itself. We won't even discuss that. But the next tier of Team Liquid, EG, FlyQuest, I feel like that's a good tier itself, mm-hmm. even though currently EG off their super strong victory over Team Liquid does look a bit above. I still feel comfortable having this be one of our new parameters of talking and judging about teams during the season, be upper bracket playoff teams, lower bracket playoff teams. For me, top four is a big cutoff that we're going to have to start incorporating because of the format of playoffs. And I would feel already, even though it's so early into summer, I would stick a pin in that.
So I feel pretty okay with that, but I still, like, if we're just saying the bracket is just from second to fourth, right? You know, I think that feels pretty okay. But I feel like there's a pretty big gap between what EG has shown me and what TL has shown me for sure. Mm-hmm. I also think FlyQuest hasn't beaten a single good team yet. So, like, just putting that out there, you know, the TSM draft was absolute garbage, and TSM hasn't been doing well anyway. So, really, they lost to Cloud9.
You put them second, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, and I think, and we'll get to that. And I think they're doing really bad. But you know, like, they beat two of the absolute worst teams in the league. They lost to Cloud9, and then they beat TSM, who had probably the worst draft of the year and isn't playing well. So that is like, I can't blame FlyQuest for that, but I just don't know where to put FlyQuest. And then TL, I actually don't think TL looked as good as I was expecting. I think that their game against Golden Guardians, it was like, okay, you know, you kind of like sat around and eventually you outscaled them. They didn't know how to close the game. Okay. They got absolutely trashed by EG. Their TSM win becomes somewhat less impressive as we see how poorly TSM is doing against good teams. And like all of a sudden the TL wins aren't feeling that impressive. I really don't like the drafting that they have been having. It's been like really kind of like passive, wait for late. And I was expecting more of like the get aggressive with Broxa, you know, go in there with Jensen and try to like slam mid jungle 2v2, because I think they're so talented there. So I've been kind of disappointed. So at least with what I've seen so far, I do feel like EG is a little bit in a tier of their own. That may change significantly in the coming weeks, but just based on the first 2 weeks, I feel like it's Cloud9 and then it's EG, and then it has to be like another tier before we talk about those other teams.
I would throw FlyQuest in the EG tier. I actually think FlyQuest does look pretty good. I just don't know whether to call it underperforming or overperforming. I'll just say that they're performing at expectation, basically, because we also have to factor in the Mash substitution. He's been pretty good, I think. You know, not like he's playing perfectly, but he has slotted in and not slowed them down at all. Which is a good a decent substitution, depending on what you're trying to get out of it, which feels like maybe motivating or trying to learn for the future, not about temporary improvement. So I'm pretty good with FlyQuest. I still had them second. I don't think they're actually second, but they're not so far below I'd call them underperforming. TL, I think, is overperforming. I'm with you about that. Like, they're 3-1. I don't think that they'll finish 12-6 or 14-4 or anything like that. I think they'll drop games as they start going up against the other people in their tier that they're in right now.
Yeah.
Your points about draft, I think, are hold up pretty well. And I think they have the talent to not be overperforming right now, but, you know, just at their actual level of play, I don't think it's that high. Even that 100 Thieves game that they won, you know, like, why'd they get Baron? You know, like, they kind of threw, honestly, a little bit. So I'm not super hot on them.
But they obviously could get there, right? But
yes, the first 2 weeks. The potential's there. But right and now,
TSM, Kobe, you know, you pointed them out. Yeah, I had them really high in preseason rankings. You know, I did think that they would be kind of in the mix with that upper bracket group, right? You know, and I thought that they could even be on the top end of that upper bracket group. I do think that they have been very disappointing. I think the TL game was a disaster. The one thing that is kind of giving me some hope that maybe they can turn things around is that there's like such glaring, obvious problems in their losses. You know, when you think about TSM, they're 2-2. Their two wins have been pretty solid, not against great competition, but their two losses, obviously they got trashed by FlyQuest and TL. The TL game was that absolutely abysmal Speak of Kane game. You know, there were other issues, but like that was terrible. And then their FlyQuest game, oh my God, that draft was seriously the worst draft of the season for sure. Like it was horrible.
No, it would for sure beat the CLG draft.
The full poke with Cassio.
It would beat the full CLG, but no tank, because they don't need to kill tanks.
But in the context of the game, like they had no ability to kill the team. And that is one of the like most classic examples of drafting for your matchup. You're drafting in isolation and you're not thinking at all about the bigger picture. Like that was just terrible. It's one of those situations where you're like, all right, well, Tank Fiddle is good at this. And Syndra is good into Aphelios. This is great. We have like two winning matchups here. And then it's like, you know, fucking just tank with like 4,000 MR just walks up and you ult him for 3 damage. And you're like, well, who's supposed to kill that guy? I guess it's the Lee Sin and the Volibear.
And that for sure is what it's going to look like in a lot of these matches where you have either FlyQuest or Team Liquid on one side. Because to me, those teams are very, very similar in how they want to play the game, right? They're the ones drafting lots of scaling, these beefy front lines. And so then up against this class of teams that are actually, you know, fairly high performing teams and play this scaling way, if you're trying to be TSM and you come in and you're rotating all these champ select moves like, ooh, we got our Syndra. Curry, by the way, tweeted out, I'm glad my mind control bait worked with leaving Syndra open versus TSM because everybody knows, you know, that's a Bjergsen go-to. If you're trying to play that game and you're saying, okay, I see our win of we're going to have a Volibear lane top that should win hard, right? Because he's very good early. And a Lee Sin jungle. I mean, Spica, amazing on the previous Lee Sin game. So yep. You're like, all right, we're for sure giving him that one. You can do that. And he created a lot of action early with that. Fiddlesticks can try and shove and create action early. And then like you're saying, and like I said previously in the show, I love the Syndra into Aphelios as an isolated matchup.
They just didn't think about the bigger picture.
Exactly. You have to think in your entire team composition. The only way that TSM could have won that game, the only way, is if they smashed early.
Yeah.
Right. And if you are able to smash so hard early on abusing, you know, Trundle, jungle, which Santorin has been extremely good on, and some of these lanes, which FlyQuest actually have really good defensive options, then you can win. But your percentage chance there coming out of draft has got to be very
single
low,
digit.
Right?
And I even think that Syndra wasn't the problem. I think if Syndra didn't get flexed to double it for the first time he's ever played it, I mean, it's one of the best champions for Bjergsen ever historically, and you just had a regular marksman in the bottom lane, you can win that game, right? Yeah. Like, you know, Syndra is not inherently a bad champion.
But my Fiddlesticks mid.
Yeah.
Well, that's so, what I was going to say is, like, you could also find another option with a physical mid or something that's
Yeah, better. I mean, they could have gone for something, but there's not a lot of good scaling
DPS physical mids.
Or yeah. You know, there's it's like there's Jace and there's Lucian and there's, you know, there's like, you know, Aurelias and things like that, but usually not tank killers. But you know, either way, you know, kind of similarly to how I feel about TL has obviously been doing a lot better than TSM, and that has to be said. But I do think that, you know, they still have the pieces, and because the losses were such glaring errors, it wasn't just like everyone's bad and they can't win a lane. It kind of felt like, ooh, you really overlooked the draft, and ooh, you really didn't do anything, you know, with that Kane game where, you know, it's kind of like this rookie type player. Last but not least, Immortals. Mm. Least and last.
Yeah, there
least
we go.
And last. By the way, I just want to add on the other one, we have to be fair with, you know, the rules that we're judging the teams by. TSM is the other team that got a Dignitas and an Immortals game, and those were their two wins. So,
yeah,
like we said to CLG, and we're like,
overperforming.
All right. Yeah.
TSM's overperforming.
Yeah.
Immortals, we said it at the beginning, and as soon as we even heard the roster changes, we didn't have Immortals previously, or at least I did not, in my power rankings previously very high. As soon as I heard that they are having these internal issues where they benched three of their LCS players, Hako is out of there, Xmithie's out of there, I was like, boom, immediately they're last on my list. Yeah. And that is where they've come in at. We are already pretty deep on time, so let's just, I mean, you could say your 2 cents on...
I'm just glad that they've communicated so well about why they made these decisions. That's what makes it so palatable.
I didn't expect anything, and I'm still disappointed.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. Shall we get to some Twitter questions?
Yeah.
I actually have an interview with, or requesting an interview with Zabutin to try and get some more info for next week. Let's jump into Twitter questions. So number one is from Oblivion's Oath 15. Esports Kobe, Mark, and Azale, would you rather bring Sven Skarin back to TSM, giving you 4 out of 5 of the winningest TSM roster, or bring in Xmithie?
Option A, por favor. I think Sven Skarin's playing at a higher level. He's been playing at a higher level for a little bit. I think even on the TL days with Smithie, he was really good. But he was never much of an individual playmaker. And I feel like that's what TSM needs more than more control style jungling.
It also just feels like that's what the meta is right now.
Yeah.
Is junglers being able to power farm and dominate and have more influence on the game rather than just setting up your teammates. So I tend to agree the Sven Skarin thing, assuming we're just like, yeah, Sven Skarin would love to go there and Xmithie would love to go there and everyone would be happy, then who would you pick? Right. Cause that's not always the case with former teams.
I guess I'll have a follow-up question. Would you add Hanser in there if we're just putting the gang back together again? Because I don't know, I'm a little iffy. But I don't think it's not something that I would instantly say no to, which says
you're
something.
You're saying there's a chance.
Yeah, exactly. Jordan W. says, hey, the dive. This is Jordan. Just wanted
Wait,
to...
this is... isn't this a...
Oh, right. This is one of our voice messages. Okay.
Hey, the dive. This is Jordan. Just wanted to know if you ever think we will get to the point where we will have coaches in comms for the entire game, like traditional sports where coaches can call out plays real time and make adjustments while the game is being played, like basketball or soccer. Want to know if you think League could ever go there. Thanks. Love the show.
You pointing at me?
I mean, I don't know where it shows up on Dive when it, YouTube when it moves around our boxes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But go for it.
This is a question that comes up, I think, every so often.
Every couple of years we talk about it.
Yeah. And my stance hasn't changed too much over those years. League of Legends is a lot different than other sports, where League is at its core in a lot of ways an intelligence-based game, like an information game, where you're trying to make moves happen without the person knowing, like ganks and barons and, you know, flanks, and how you approach everything is ultimately about what you know versus what they know sometimes. And there is obviously skill checks and all this other stuff. But that doesn't exist in traditional sports. You know, like you can see everyone on the field. Yeah. So like you have, you know, a POV that's limited as a human being, but like there's nothing really stopping you from seeing everything going on. And so having a coach sit behind you in League who can be your brain that is processing this information and keeping track of all these variables for you, who can then just talk the whole time, it takes out a lot of skill that I think is very interesting in League of Legends, and who can manage the most variables while still using their hands real good.
Yeah, I kind of like the intelligence-based game, and I started thinking
information.
So we have like agility-based games, and
that's melee, bro. Break your hands.
Strength-based games. Honestly, yeah. The thing that I always come back to whenever this topic pops up is that decision making and planning is so much a part of the game that if you separate the two from being a good player, then you only have to have, you know, solo queue players, or, you know, practice 1v1 matchups all day, because there's so much that goes into a strategy game, an intelligence-based game, as you're...
information.
We've dubbed it now, that it really does change too much for me. That would change too much professional play from the game that I play at home, where I have to think about everything, And a lot of it is teamwork. A lot of it is planning around objectives and strategy of the overall game, not just, you know, being told where or what to do.
It also eliminates the strength of some of the players, right? Like we were just talking about Smithy, right? That was always one of the strengths that people talk a lot about with him, is that strategical strength. And it's like, okay, maybe he is mechanically not as impressive as some of these other players. He hasn't always been like the solo queue beast or anything, but he's been such a smart player, and that has always been a really big edge for him in competitive play. And, you know, as a result, he's been the most successful North American jungler ever. So that is something that he would also be removing. I will say, I don't think it's just as easy as like Koma sits down behind me and in this world he can speak perfect English, and now like all of his information is just imparted to all of us as we play. Because if there's one coach, there's still five screens you're trying to watch. You have to know who to tell when. So it's not as though like they can be driving your character the whole time, right? It would be more, I think, like the coach would be more responsible for like, what is the play your team is going to go for next? All right, set up vision around this dragon. All right, look for a pick here. Okay, we need to prevent Baron from being taken. Okay, we need to like make sure we poke them out before we engage or whatever. It would be more that style of thing, which I do think is kind of like interesting. And I think just to like play devil's advocate, like I'm with you. I think it's cooler that we have these players who specialize in that stuff. But to play devil's advocate and play on the other side of it, if it gave better League of Legends, that could be kind of cool too. You know, if there are less of these kind of like boneheaded plays and stuff because the coach is able to do that. And you can also have this situation where it's like the coaches who are the best at doing that also then become a really integral part of the team, right? And that becomes like part of having a good pro team, is having a really good kind of like play caller and shot caller who can, you know, watch these five screens and know where to look and know what to talk about, and not just like blue comms. So I think that is kind of interesting too. There was actually something with this that was kind of interesting in WoW raiding in the last like world first raid. I didn't really follow it that closely, but I read this thing where it was like basically the guild that got world first in this most recent raid actually used a raid leader, like a shot caller, who wasn't actually playing the game. And no one had ever done that before, but they basically like set this guy up who could watch all these different POVs and just like tell everyone what to do. And you know, that is kind of like this sort of premise, you know, put into play, and it did work. And I believe it was like, I think Complexity Limit or someone who got
I remember that world
first. So like that, I was like, that's pretty cool and that's pretty creative. So you know maybe it could kind of like raise up the gameplay level.
Yeah, it would for sure. I mean, the same way like in the army, you have generals who are not like just a foot soldier running out to the front line while also trying to tell everyone what to do. It would definitely level up the strategy. I think one part is the minimap is mm-hmm. a really important part. Like people think pros, you know, just like we don't talk about it a ton, but like people just miss stuff on the minimap all the time. They'll run through wards, they won't see them, they won't clear them, they'll just not know that someone was doing something. And this is a huge part of solo queue too. It's one of the things I always struggle the most with, was just map awareness. And
it's hard, man.
It's hard to do, and that's why it's really impressive by pros, and they will mess it up. And this is an avenue that would just be almost perfectly cleaned up by the coach just staring at a mini map for a vast majority of the game.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think it just removes some of the skill cap from it. Why we get so excited by players that have the full package. I think we might lose that.
Totally. And I will just tag on this voice message. If you guys want to send us your voice messages, it is now, The Dive is on anchor.fm. So you should be able to find us on there, and you can actually leave us a voice recording. We're going to be pulling some questions from there. We'll still be looking at Twitter. But also, if you're going to leave us a recording, try to keep it relatively brief. We got some that were good questions, but were super long, and it's not going to fit as well as if you can kind of keep it to a concise question.
If you like a Twitter question, yeah, you can type it out as a Twitter take or something, and then say,
we got a Lingo Lidmeyer.
This is a test for the dive.
Successful.
Perfect length too. Yeah.
All right, let's get our next one from Aaron Alexander. That was short and sweet. I just thought that was super funny. That we successfully
heard that one off the desk.
Yeah, me either.
Let's get our next one from Aaron.
I've been wondering this for a while, and I've been following League for a while with Corki and Ezreal. They both seem to be in different lanes, Ezreal mid and bottom, Corki mid and bottom. Why do you guys think that Corki fell out of the bottom lane while Ezreal fell out of the mid lane?
I mean, so there's a number of different components that go into it. One, the big ones for why I think Corky fell out of bottom is kind of damage type. He just slots a lot easier into mid lane because you get a DPS magic damage champion, which is what a lot of mid lane already is. And so, like, you're not warping team comps to take Corky for the most part.
Also, Corky scales incredibly well, trying to get to your Trinity Force and package
levels.
Usage.
Yeah,
for
levels.
Me, package usage from the mid lane is gives you a lot more options. And since they've buffed package over the last couple of patches, it actually does mean a difference in the plays that you can pull off. And the more levels you have, you actually gain a tremendous amount of stats for your levels. It's over 500 gold for most of the champions worth of stats, which makes it more of a power move that Corkys can actually package in and use it aggressively. Where if it's your lower level AD carry Corky, he's probably, you know, have a lot higher risk of getting blown up on entry.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people also talk about with Corky, you know, level 11 for rank 2 ultimate plus Trinity Force is a pretty big power spike there. So that's pretty important. As far as Ezreal, you know, I tend to feel like, you know, we have seen some AD Ezreal, but like a lot of times when Ezreal is mid, it's around kind of like, you know, an interesting build like Runeglaive and things like mm-hmm. that was kind of making him work, right? Where it was
that
like,
lizard item when we had a long time ago. They built the jungle burning lizard one too.
Yeah,
there, I mean, he would. Yeah,
there's been a lot of those, right? And that's often been where he has popped up in solo lanes is kind of around these, like, you know, wacky builds. But I do think that one of the reasons that we don't see him as much in mid lane, at least currently, is his wave clear is really poor. Yeah. And they don't, it's really easy to abuse him as a lot of these other champions. I mean, Corky included. Corky, all of his stuff is basically AoE, right? You know, you can be phosphorus bombing it and using your Gatling gun and everything, and ultimate even just like poking out the wave and pushing it in. So Corky can do that. Ezreal really can't. And again, it's a lot of these mage matchups. You're just gonna be pushed in, and then you're locked under your turret, and you're in the situation where then the mage and the opposing jungler can be doing things like invading and so on and so forth. And I think that's a big reason we don't really see a lot of them.
Yeah.
There's also his matchups used to be a lot better because he used to have an attack speed slow on his W, which was hella oppressive. And so like when Ezreal did go mid in the past, even before he got his Runeglaive, he was actually a lane bully who could really dominate some matchups like Orianna's and stuff where they just couldn't keep up with him. If he lands his W, shift in Q auto and you just get messed up. And so like these kinds of patterns are not quite there as much anymore. So a lot of changes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to tack on for the wave clear thing. For Ezreal, it used to rely a lot on gaining control early and constantly using your auto attacks to keep up. And it's a lot more difficult with the changes to a lot of the marksmen early. Okay, that is going to do it for this episode of The Dive. Thank you.
What a whopper.
Joining us once again. I feel like they have
an absolute
started.
Chonker of an episode.
they've all begun to really extend and be so long that I don't get lunchtime anymore because I do this or that right after it, and then we go into all of our meetings. So I'm gonna end talking right now.
Forget cat for Kobe. What about lunch for Kobe?
That's what I'm talking about. still be sure to tune in for the LCS starting on Friday Night League. It's gonna return with two bangers of matches, CLG versus FlyQuest and Team Liquid versus Cloud9. Take it away, guys.
Let's go.
Bye.